Welcome to Keeping It Real with Frankie D, an Italian-American podcast at ItalianAmericanLife.com. And today is the fourth part of our podcast series on Christopher Columbus. Today we look to discuss beyond Columbus. And we are partnered with the Paul and Ann Rubino Italian-American Studies Program at Loyola University in Chicago and the director of the program, Carla Simonini. And today our guest is John Viola, the former president of the National Italian American Foundation and the executive producer of the Italian American podcast and the executive director of the National Columbus Education Foundation. John, Carla, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you. Thank you, John, for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. This is great. It's great to be in the guest seat.
Well, let me start out by giving you credit for having inspired these series of podcasts. I hope most people believe that imitation is the highest form of flattery. So, John, you started a series of interviews on the subject of Columbus on the Italian American podcast, of which you're the executive producer. I've been listening to those and I was inspired to do something similar, and hence I reached out to Frank and we came up with this idea. And our series has been focused a little more particularly on Chicago and what's been going on in the greater Chicagoland area with regard to the statues, the monuments, and whether, you know, the ongoing celebration of the holiday and the parade that we have here every year in Chicago. So thank you again for joining us. And one of the reasons we wanted to talk to you is because you're so involved at the national level with maintaining Italian American identity and culture. And so much just seems to be invested in Columbus these days. Our specific topic, and we're hoping that you can help elucidate this, is really why the investment in Columbus still today. You know, why is it so often that when you see Italian Americans represented as a group in the national media, it's around Columbus or issues surrounding Columbus Day celebrations? And really, what does it mean to be Italian American in the 21st century? What beyond Columbus, who are we as a group, as a community, as a people? And how should we be presenting ourselves in the public light? So that's a lot in a few short words.
That wasn't just one question, right? That was a preview of what we're going to talk about. Okay, good.
Exactly. Maybe you could start just telling about your own background, how you got involved with so many different Italian-American organizations. Because I tend to be, when I go to a lot of these, I tend to be one of the younger faces in the crowd. And I ain't so young. So
none of us are anymore. Yeah. I think, as my partner and co-host Pat would say, I must have some deep trauma in my past that I haven't unpacked yet that made me a professional Italian American, because I don't know, from when I was a young kid, we moved out of our ethnic enclave in Brooklyn into a town in New Jersey, which had no Italians in it. And so I think that otherness kind of made me really dig down and hold very tight to my heritage and became really definitional. So I always was participating in all these different groups and events and whatever I could get to. And, over the years, that became actual engagement from boards of directors or volunteer positions, whatever. And in 2012, I was tasked to come on to the National Italian American Foundation executive directorship, which was evolved forward to be the COO position and then eventually president and COO. And it was an organization I've been a part of since I was like 16 years old. I always loved what NIAF has done and continues to do for Italian Americans. And so that really made me a professional Italian American. And from there, traveling and participating with all these groups, I ended up eventually becoming a part of the Italian Sons and Daughters of America out of the Midwest. And eventually the podcast founded by Dolores and Anthony became a real big part of my life. And we moved forward in merging what I was doing into what they were doing and creating this new kind of media presence with all the different video, audio, and conferences and things. So I've just tried a few times to go into the real world and I just can't seem to escape Italian America, and I kind of like it here. So this is it.
And if you don't have to leave, I wouldn't.
Yeah, exactly.
They keep pulling you back in, as they say.
Yeah, I think I'm doing it to myself, but it's well worth it.
Yeah. So go the podcast is interesting in and of itself. So the Columbus topic was sort of a different sort of series of interviews than you normally do. I mean, I listen to it pretty regularly, and you seem to focus a lot more on what we would typically associate with Italian-American culture, certainly things that have to do with contemporary Italy, visiting Italy, food, different subjects along those lines. So maybe just talk a little bit more about why the Columbus series.
Yeah, so, you know, for us, what we found, Dolores and Anthony started the show 5 years ago, and I came on with my other co-hosts, Pat O'Boyle and Rosella Rago, about 2 years ago now. And we kind of found that our secret sauce was a combination of education and entertainment. So we could do mm-hmm. current events. We could do folk culture. I was studied to be an anthropologist, so I like to bring that kind of anthropological take into what we do. And it works, and it works for us. And the audience has really grown, and everybody's reacted well to it. And so we've touched on Columbus a few times because we do current events and Italian-American identity when we feel it's important. But we sort of made a decision as all of this controversy ramped up. You know, we were used to doing it around September, October. It was kind of like, okay, we'll talk about the Columbus question. As it all started to happen in the wake of everything that's gone on in the country, we actually made a conscious decision not to address this stuff. And we said, you know, to our audience, this is kind of clearly something that's going to leave part of our audience out. There's a lot of diverse opinions, and our listenership is more about kind of the fun of being Italian. But we got a lot of mail, a lot of emails, social media, whatever it was, from listeners who really did want us to address this. And as I started to look at what was being done out there by other community groups or media platforms, it dawned on me that everybody was kind of taking a side and very aggressively defending a position without actually digging down and saying, what are we basing any of these things on? Nobody really went into the source material. And so I happened to then be doing this work that I was solicited to be part of the National Columbus Education Foundation, and was happy to participate there when we talked about education as the core of it. And so the more I dug through the modern writings on Columbus, the more I found that there were dozens and dozens of interpretations of a very limited set of source material. So yes, everybody was kind of doing what they wanted with Columbus. And I decided that the best thing I could do for our audience was to say from the very beginning, you know, I'll put my hands up in the air. I'm not an expert. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go on a journey of curiosity and concern that I would normally go through anyway, just reading and researching, but I'm going to do it with you on the microphone. So we went out and we did about 25 different interviews and tried to cobble together the most important parts for each of the three episodes we've done so far, and the final three will release closer to the holiday. So it was really about this journey intellectually, I guess, myself, that I could take an audience with me on.
Yeah, no, that again, I think that's what I took inspiration from, what Frank and I did in putting this together as well, because we're doing something similar here. I know as, you know, as a university professor, as a teacher, as a researcher, I noticed that tendency too, like that confirmation bias that you have a position and then you seek out the sources or the interpretation of the sources that support your position. Yeah. And that's not what we wanted to do. We wanted to just say, look, here is what's out there. Here are different ways to look at it. And let's give people resources so that they can make intelligent, informed opinions about who this figure is and what he means. In particular, our focus is naturally on the Italian-American community that Frank and I both serve in different ways. So even though I'm at the university, my position was fundraised by the Italian-American community, and I'm very aware of that, very grateful to that. I mean, $500,000 came from the people of the Chicagoland area because they wanted this position to exist. And even after I'm gone, it'll exist in perpetuity. So I feel strongly that this position belongs to the community as much as to the university, and anything that we can do to provide that sort of bridge and that outreach is valuable and important. And like you said, the podcast and having a voice like this is a means of reaching a greater audience than we could if we had just a traditional lecture at the university or a presentation or something like that. And that's where Frank is so important, because his podcast already reaches a good audience here in Chicago. So yeah, we're on the same page with that. I wanted to start with the idea of, like, why has Columbus just become a flashpoint, do you think? Why has so much, again, going back to that, when you see Italian Americans being represented as a group in the media, oftentimes, I can't even think of another time besides around the issue of Columbus. And from you as being involved with the organizations, and I'm not talking about this necessarily from a complicated historical, psychological, but just the tenor within the organizations that you've been a part of. You know, what is it about Columbus that resonates so much with these groups?
I think it's interesting because in my conversations with so many diverse voices, I've heard everything from sort of, Columbus was the great equalizer for us as a people when we were first arriving in significant numbers and clearly looked down upon. We could hold Columbus up as a torch that said, but for us, where would you be to the Anglo-Saxon Protestant establishment? And I've heard the other side of the coin from the anti-Columbus crowd who would say, well, Columbus was sort of a whitewashed non-Italian anyway, and he was hoisted upon these masses of poor immigrants by the illustrious members of the community, those who kind of wanted to assimilate, and here was their ticket in, and everybody else kind of had to accept it. And in all of these sort of different versions, I keep coming back to the same thing, which is we just don't know Columbus that much. You know, we know a lot about him. There's great primary sources and secondary sources, but to contextualize a navigator in the employ of Spain from a city-state of Genoa in our modern world of national identity and ethnic identity tied to nationhood and then immigration, you know, we just can't really hold these things parallel. So I think for so many Italian Americans, Columbus really is not so much a figure that represents a historical biography as much as he is kind of the visage on the flag that we've had for many generations. So I think people that defend Columbus without actually doing the work to exonerate him of the charges, I think they just see him as much a part of the Italian American identity as any other kind of icon, as the flags crossed or, whatever you kind of associate as the visual material history of who we are. And I think for the other side, Italian Americans that have decided that Columbus is not an adequate representation and hero, I think they don't see these proto-Italian Americans as in any way related to who they are, because frankly, I think nowadays our ethnicity is one that we can option into and out of. I think they have, we're not being in any way socially ghettoized as Italian Americans. We can wear it when we want to and take it off when we don't. And so I think Columbus has lost his meaning for some and taken on a completely different meaning for others.
Yeah. Definitely see that. I know you're hinting on my area. I do identity research on identity and the idea of, an expressive identity, or some would even say, the assimilation is the symbolic and ethnicity, but you have a choice. You decide who you are in this contemporary multi-generational Italian American thing. I myself, I'm like fifth generation if you count them out. So. Wow. I have friends who I grew up with who are much closer to the immigrant experience, who got married, changed their names, and, effectively erased their ethnic identity. It doesn't mean anything to them. So if we are going to assume that it does mean something to still be Italian American now in the 21st century, and we take Columbus out of the mix, what's left? Go, Frank.
Pose a question to John since we have him here. Since you are the executive director of this National Columbus Education Foundation, which is a new group, which I'm assuming sprung out of this period we are living in with this being in jeopardy of losing our holiday, the day, the parades, the statues. Could you tell us something about this group and what you hope to achieve and where you're all going with this?
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be my pleasure. The National Columbus Education Foundation was the brainchild of the some of the leadership of a few of the larger Italian American organizations. I was 6 years at the National Italian American Foundation, and I left in the last day of 2017. I started the new year back in New York, and so I had had conversations with certain leaders of both NIAF and other groups about this kind of vision as a need to take on what was becoming an increasingly significant topic for us. And about a year and a half ago, I guess, maybe a little bit less, I received a call from some of them, from the National Italian American Foundation, the Columbus Citizens Foundation, the Italian Sons and Daughters of America, people who I'd worked with, colleagues that I'd really come to value, that they were looking to start this and they were soliciting participation from the Order Sons of Italy, UNICO, and of course the Order Sons of Italy Commission for Social Justice. So the original vision was this unprecedented opportunity to put together the 5-6 largest groups in the Italian American community around an issue that everybody felt was important, at least from an institutional level. And they were seeking out leadership, and they came to me and asked if I would be interested in applying for the position. And I knew with the responsibility with the production company, the podcast, I couldn't really take on a full-time gig, but I cared about the mission of the organization. And I cared about the people that had really taken a bit of a gamble to put the community together, because as we know, as Italian Americans, that doesn't happen very often, unfortunately. So I wanted to be there at that. That was like a sort of seminal moment in the community for me. You know, everybody kicked in money to create this thing and everybody was equal and it was wonderful. And that'd been a big part of my vision when I got to NIAF, just having the groups more closely together. So the mission, as it originally set out, was really to have a unified Italian American response. And when I came on, I felt that we needed to be a little bit more nuanced about it. I actually thought our job as an educational foundation in particular was not to be the community voice, but on behalf of our community, as the community most closely associated with Columbus, we needed to be the ones to do the work. And it really struck me, and the reason that I kind of moved my life and schedule around to participate even part-time in this is because I felt, and I still feel, for me personally, Columbus is less of an Italian-American issue and more of an American issue that we Italian-Americans, because of our close association, sort of owe to the rest of the nation this hard work and often uncomfortable work to get to the bottom of this. I think it's a service we can provide. You know, he's such a big part of the foundational mythology of the country, but also the idea of what Columbus does, the risk that he takes, the self-worth that has to be at the forefront of that risk. To me, that's the ethos of America. And every time an immigrant of any ethnicity gets steps on the soil of America for the first time, and in some way, they're recreating Columbus's journey and they are setting foot in a new world as well. And so I believe that that's the best thing about this country. I saw it affect so positively my family and our story over generations that I kind of felt, okay, we need to de-emphasize the Italianness of this, because this is a service for everybody. So that's kind of where the foundation's gone.
And are you guys going to be looking to like try to attract other groups as well? Yeah. And form an alliance?
Yeah, that's the long-term vision. I mean, I think everybody kind of thought we would be building up towards Columbus Day. And then when everything sort of turned topsy-turvy, we went from being in sort of active mode to passive mode, active mode to reactive mode pretty quickly. So the ideas that were there at the forefront sort of had to be born in the trenches or reborn in the trenches. But yes, long-term, the idea is to certainly honor the immense commitment that the Italian American community institutionally has made in creating this, but also to say, this is not just about us, because when we make it just about us, it actually doesn't help Columbus.
Right, right. So as an education foundation, are you looking to make a difference? I mean, I don't know, like make a difference in the schools, like in that sense of education, like in the teaching of Columbus, or that is a...
with all due respect to the teaching and professing, and I know Carla's obviously at an important position for our community there, you know, you've probably been podcasting longer than anybody in the Italian American community. So I think there was an article today saying people who listen to podcasts are on average better becoming or learning more than other routes and other modes. And I just sort of fell into this business and I've started to see that this kind of stuff that you can have democratic and long-term access to is the best tool we have going forward. So when we talked about education, I think the original vision was, how do you lobby and how do you, you know, affect curriculums and teaching? And frankly, I don't think you can. I mean, I've seen many, many teachers out there from primary school up who teach Columbus with this vitriol and bias that's never, they're not going to, you know, you can make the best workbook in the world, they're not going to use it. But if you can educate people through informing them and putting these nuggets of knowledge out there in the world. I think that's the best way we can do it. So the idea for us is content that's more accessible and I think speaks directly to the.
I totally agree with you, and I understand because when I do things in this nature, I always tell people, I want this information to go on, and A, you're not going to learn it at school, and B, odds are you're not learning at home anymore.
Yeah.
Because the families don't, they, you know, we've gone too many years and too many decades that, so it's very important stuff. And I agree with you. Yes. Via podcasts, via social media, via all these things, I guess any way you can educate the people about this subject is a worthy thing.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, popular dialogue is so much more informed now by what people are reading in social media through their email blasts, what they choose to sign up for, how they spread it themselves, this virality of information. I think it's very rare that somebody comes back to their friends and says, look what I learned in school today. Let's change the world based on this, you know? So, I mean, I think that the school system, high school, grade school, the university has an important place in this and can certainly improve its objectivity around Columbus. But I think we need to go right to the people.
I agree with that too. I mean, as an educator, I think the most important thing we can do is make our students critical thinkers for themselves. So as you were saying that scholars using, and not necessarily scholars, now we have people who are social interpreters, cultural interpreters, commentators, looking at the same primary sources and interpreting it different ways. So bringing students back to those primary sources and then say, well, this is how this particular person interpreted this, and this is how someone else looked at it. How do you look at it? That's really what we need to get back to, putting the student in the position to make rational, informed decisions. And I know I was listening to one of your episodes and it resonated with me. You're younger than me, but I think we went through that same arc of schooling where Columbus changed, you know, because we talked earlier with Professor William Connell, and he talked about the history of the holiday and how originally it was a very American embracing holiday. It was meant to associate America with the land. And the first time it was a holiday that was looking not at our original founding fathers or the Civil War, but a figure who transcended that and had a new vision of Americanness, and it included the Native Americans and all the new immigrants and whatnot. So I grew up, I think, when that was still the case. We still were learning it in school. We learned the poem and everything. And then later, you know, there was the turn in the, with 1992, the quincentennial. And earlier than that, there was the publication of, you know, Howard Zinn's famous textbook, which is very important. I mean, he set out to take a different look at history. You know, he says right up front there, I am taking the view of history from the rabbit, not the rabbit hunter. So, I mean, that was important work that was being done. And that's more what my daughter, for example, who's college age now, was exposed to. You know, so she has a very different view on, you know, Columbus in terms of what he is. And, you know, what is the reality? You need to be able to look at it in all different perspectives, the prism there. I mean, I want my daughter to, getting back to Italian-American identity, I want her to feel pride in her Italian-Americanness. And, you know, I was talking to her about Columbus, and I was trying to make the case that, you know, he was appropriated by the community at a time when the community felt very marginalized and discriminated against. And so he became a figure where the Italians could make a direct connection to America's foundational myth. It was an entree for them into full acceptance into the American society. And her answer to me was more like, well, I don't really care about how my ancestors, you know, got access by buying into the imperialistic.
Right, yeah.
And, so, you know, and I respect, I mean, she's very intellectual and she's very engaged. I'm thinking, okay, so where do I go from here in terms of how do I, you know, beyond Columbus, where do we meet in that discussion about who we are? And,
you know, I have this fear, and maybe I'm just that last generation before social media told you could read everything you think exists on a topic and become an expert without any certification.
Oh,
and, you know, if 20 people in a Facebook group agree with you, it's an echo chamber and you're onto something here. I think I'm the last generation in a world where there was sort of social conventions, whether you liked them or not. And I feel like I've spoken with a lot of people who sort of have this sense that there's no need for the ancestor sort of struggle, and there's no need for a hero like Columbus, and why do we have heroes, and wouldn't the world be better if we didn't, and, you know, everybody's flawed and all these things. And I just, I worry that we've created, or has been created for us, particularly by technology, a society that's like alarmingly post-human. We have this sense we really don't need one another. That's how we get this cancel culture where we, okay, I'm just canceling you. But, you know, that's not real. That doesn't exist. And if you're in a position of need, you can't cancel that person. And so I fear
it's not a strategy for creating bonds either or bridges.
No, it's not. It's not a strategy.
Creating silos of isolated people with their own ideas and their own, like you said, the echo chamber. Yeah.
And that's clearly what's happening. I mean, I respect everybody's opinion and how they get to it. But I mean, I've had conversations and I was talking to a professor. I'm going to forget his name now, which is horrible. Professor Steve Cerulli, who's part of the movement to rename Columbus Day in his locality.
Yes,
in Connecticut.
I read his article that was on the
Lavoce, yeah. And he's wonderful. We hit it off. We completely disagree on a lot of things and we completely agree on other things. But I was really fascinated by an assertion that he made in one of the interviews. And I don't think it made it onto the tape because it wasn't terribly pertinent. But he said, you know, I do have some friends who get mad at me or disappointed in me because I don't think the entire American experiment was a bad thing. And my jaw dropped and it was tangential to the conversation. But I said, Steve, you got to reiterate that for me, even if it's not for the episode. I just have to understand, you're telling me you have colleagues and contemporaries, and he's not that much younger than me, who really believe this country is just fundamentally a bad place. And he said, yeah, many of them. And I thought to myself, you know, this is why I feel more than ever emboldened to find out if Columbus is defensible and if so, defend him. Because you could say what you want about this country. We have many, many flaws and many, many ills that are deep-seated in the social consciousness and deep-seated in the way our society's unfolded. But like you said, if your daughter comes home and says, I don't want to be attached to that imperialist history, if we reduce the nation that has given, I think, more to the democratic process and equality than any on the planet in a brief 200-plus years to this idea of an imperialist experiment, we are doomed as a global society, because I don't care how many roads and bridges China builds around the world or what kind of, you know, concrete universities they put up. There's no such thing as the Chinese dream. It just doesn't exist, but the American dream does. And the fact that we have a generation of well-educated, at least on paper, young adults or adults who can actually lead with the idea that this is a fundamentally bad place frightens me. And it makes me more dedicated to at least clarifying history and asking people to be more thoughtful in listening to one another in a world that doesn't require that anymore.
Well, I can certainly say from my own position, in my own circle of acquaintances and with the generation of my children, like I said, who are college age, there is certainly that sense that, you know, the imperialist experiment should end and that we are, you know, we need to reform. I don't think that's necessarily bad that young people are thinking that way, because positive change comes from disillusionment. I mean, I think a lot of the big social movements that we've had with the civil rights and going back even with, you know, the Italians first getting their acceptance had to do with people who pushed for reform and for change. So I don't find that as disturbing as the inability to have dialogue more so. That's what really bothers me, that, yeah, okay, well, if we are promoting that there's a problem here, how do we fix it? You know, when we were talking to Professor Connell, we can't go back and redo history. Columbus came, you know, it happened. Yeah. And there were a whole series, a cascade of events that took place as a result of that. And you can judge them good or bad or whatever, but here's what we have to deal with in the here and now. And how do we make this the best possible place for all of us at this moment? I think that's what I'd love to hear more of in the tenor, and also with our own Italian American identity too. Like we talked to Professor Fred Gardafe also, and he mentions, you know, he and I are both in the field of Italian American studies, and you and your presidency of NIAF, National Italian American Foundation, we had a time teamed up, the scholars and your organization, the NIAF, which is more of a, I guess, what would you call it? More of a cultural lobby group?
Educational nonprofit, I guess. That's kind of the term they use.
The mission is to promote a positive view on Italian Americans, whereas the scholars, our mission is to examine the history critically. So right. sometimes those two don't always exist comfortably. They don't always exist comfortably. And I know one thing that Professor Gardefee has talked about is this idea that you need to be able to look at some of the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know, of the past to make sense of it, to understand who you are today. And I wonder if that's not more where Italian-American identity goes beyond Columbus, the ability to look back at our own past more objectively and more critically.
We're not particularly good at that as a community, I think.
No, we're not, because we don't like to, we want to fare la bella figura, yeah. you know? You wanna...
yeah. yeah, it's true. It's so built into who we are. And I think, you know, for me, I think we're talking here about beyond Columbus. And the idea is like, well, if we are we a post-Columbus community? Well, I don't think we've ever been a Columbus community particularly, actually. I think that the one of the conclusions that I've come to over the course of all these interviews and all this work and then the podcast, the foundation, is almost a sympathy for Columbus because, you know, he's always been a figure kind of used when needed. Like when we needed, as I'm sure Bill Connell talked about, when we needed a non-British figure at the founding of the nation, there was Columbus. And when Catholics started to come in significant numbers and you needed a boogeyman and the KKK had to, you know, de-Catholicize what they saw as this great horde, tear Columbus back down. And when we Italian Americans needed a figure to put back up, there's Columbus. And now when we need to really wrestle with the true sins that are at the founding of this country, we're going to tear down Columbus. Nothing's going to change. We're not really addressing anything. We're just using this very, very nebulous figure over and over and over again in this horrible cycle of repeat. And I think A, enough is enough, and B, it's unfair, and C, most importantly for me, the problem is as a people who number 20 some odd million who have done faster and better than most immigrant groups, actually. I mean, we've had a very hard entry into this country in so many ways, but we've succeeded so wonderfully. This country's given us so much and we have given so much to it. The fact that now Columbus is being conflated with America and the American experience and the American experience itself is why I'm so alarmed. You know, it's not just tearing down, because they're not tearing down Italian Americans. Everybody will say to you, this has nothing to do with Italian Americans. We as a community can get defensive and make it that way if we want. I don't think it's a winning strategy, but they're not going after us this time. We're just sort of the group most closely tied by de facto circumstances. So I'm worried more for what Columbus's defamation means for the country at large than I am for what it means for the Italian American community.
Interesting. Yeah.
Well, definitely, I agree with you. It's a whole bigger issue of just everything, the way of life. You know, it's like we've been down every Sunday morning at one of the locations where the statue was taken in Chicago, actually in the Little Italy. And a couple times we've had a, you know, talk with some other people. And I mean, the big thing is for me is, everyone has these scholars, everybody has historians. In a simple way, they've got historians, they've got scholars, Columbus was bad. We've got historians, we've got scholars, Columbus was good. He wasn't that bad. Who's right? Is there a panel that's gonna decide who's right? No, we're never gonna convince all of them. They're not gonna convince all of us. What I tell them is, when did we become that if you walk around with a baseball bat, you could say, we don't want that statue there and it's okay. That's a problem. That's a problem for our society.
Yeah, sure. That's all indicative of this cancel culture and this idea that, you know, we've become so kind of frightened of diversity of opinion. And, you know, I would challenge anybody who says Columbus is good, you know, Columbus is bad, or once would ask you to prove the opposite. Are any of us good or bad? I don't think of myself as a good or bad person. I think of myself as a very fragile sack of guts that wakes up every morning trying to do the best I can to be positively impactful and give more than I take. That's humanity. So, you know, it's no coincidence that Columbus is being bandied about in the same sentences as George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, and, you know, people who sinned like all of us do. There's one person that's walked this earth that's never sinned, and thank God he did. So for me, I'm very hesitant to this idea that we can sort of say Columbus was a hero or Columbus was a villain. He was a man, just like anybody. And I think that what I'm trying to accomplish is to say, is the entirety of his story still an important metaphor for the country, lesson for the country, vision piece for the country? And what did he really do, if we go back to the sources? And that's the thing that's bothered me the most, because as we covered in one of the episodes, I think the last episode we did on Columbus, there's all of these things that are thrown around, right? The genocide and his leadership on Hispaniola and all, and these accusations, and obviously slavery. And, you know, the more you dig, I think the only issue that really exists with Columbus that has to be unpacked is this idea of slavery. And even in that case, and this is not an exoneration of him, but, you know, even in that case, people are either by sort of lack of understanding or with a purposed bias, conflating the idea that Columbus took prisoners from the Carib tribes and attempted to sell them as slaves with transatlantic slavery, which came 100 plus years later, and which has a massive dose of racism at its root. The slavery that Columbus engaged in was not a racist slavery. It was a rules of war type of slavery. So if we come to the conclusion that that's still something that takes the guy off the table for his role in national identity, I'm okay with that. But let's have that conversation. Let's address it. Let's not allow the misuse of history, because I have to say, Carla, I think Howard Zinn set a horrible precedent, and that he said in the beginning of his book, I'm interpreting this with a bias. And now it's become a standard text for thousands of university students for multiple generations. And that's not history.
Well, I think every historian, as much as you try to be objective, you can't help but bring some of your own bias into your work. I think that's one of the dangers of the discipline, and so he was just sort of, not to go out of my way to defend Howard Zinn, but he was putting it out there. See, let's take a look at this. What if history were written by the point of the people on the other side? And that perspective was, you know, pretty revolutionary in its day. And it made people think of history in a different way and produced a whole new level of scholarship and understanding. So from that perspective, I think that's good, as long as we're always balancing it out with all the other possible interpretations. That's what I'm saying, is that you need to have the range of perspectives, interpretations, the reliability of different sources at your disposal in order to make up your mind. That's how it should be. Your mind should be made up for that. You shouldn't have a made up mind and then go back and look for the things that confirm where you're coming from. That's my only position in terms of promoting critical thinking along those lines. So, and also, I mean, yes, it is an important part of history. And there were, you know, there are some atrocities in American history that certainly nobody is here to defend what happened to the Native Americans and the American Indian policies for generations. So you still need to be able to talk about that too. So again, it becomes this balance between why Columbus meaning something, I think, at a very personal level, in particular to the Italian American community. I mean, they really have been, although Columbus is supposed to be seen as a universal figure, it's been pitted that way. It's been the Italian thing that it's become. And so if you're going to use him as your, you know, at the very least, an excuse for a celebration of your ethnic pride, you need to be able to understand how that same figure evokes completely different reactions and feelings and understanding for another group of people. And that's where, like, why, you know, I would love to see more of that dialoguing happening, as opposed to, like, you know, us and them defending and pulling it down. That's really where my heart is. And again, like, why do we need to only display our pride on Columbus Day? I was on the float at the Columbus Day parade here in Chicago last year. I was invited by the Columbian Club, which gave a large donation to my program, and I'm very thankful for that. And it was a fun affair. I mean, it was fun. There were all different groups that were invited to participate from Latin America and whatnot. There were vendors, there were food, and then there was a lovely celebration afterwards at Casa Italia, which is an Italian cultural house in Chicago, where there was music and food and everything. And, you know, somebody came up to me and they said, look, isn't this nice? And I'm like, yes, it was. It was a wonderful day. I had a lot of fun. And he said, no one here is celebrating genocide, which is true.
Sure.
And yet your celebration, your excuse for this moment to come together in Italian-American solidarity still is anchored to that figure who has such at this point in time, so many controversial interpretations. So I'm like, what do you do about that? Yeah, you know, I guess it's a dilemma. It's a dilemma for me too, because I certainly enjoyed being there. And I also see the point of view where, I mean, my daughter is very politically engaged and I support her in that. And, you know, she, like I said, her generation, they're out there, they want to change things and they want to change things for the better. So I also respect where she's coming from and her peer group that is engaged with Columbus from a different perspective. So again, getting beyond this divisiveness, making it something better all around in terms of our educational process and our understanding. And then also for us as Italian Americans, why Columbus?
Yeah, no. And if not Columbus, what?
Yeah. I agree with you, Carla. And I know often at the Columbus parades, you know, the reporter will be going around, they stick the mic in front of someone, they say, oh, how do you feel today? And what do they answer? Oh, I'm proud to be Italian American. And I think to myself, that's awesome. But I'm proud to be Italian American 365 days a year.
Yeah.
Not just that Columbus Day. Having said that, it is a source of pride beyond does the average Italian American, can they give us a book report on who Columbus is? Of course not.
Yeah.
Of course they can't. I personally don't see that there's anything wrong with that. It's a source of pride. As I've told the opposition to Columbus, that's our day. That's our holiday. Your people just want to take away our day and our holiday, and we're all standing here with our mouths and our statues. Like, why are you just picking on us? Now, I get it. Maybe we're being a little on the sensitive side. Maybe we're being, we're feeling like the victim. But, you know, being out there and standing in those spots, I can understand a little bit. It is. It's our statue. Our people paid for that statue. Our guy is that statue. And you're coming along here and saying, I don't like it. Well, you know, it should be discussions. It should be, but should be and will be. Those are two different things. And unfortunately, today we live in a society where right now, who's got the bigger baseball bat wins.
Yeah.
That's not right.
I mean, you make an interesting point, right? That's the thing that I keep coming back to about Columbus in my mind. He has been so many things to so many different peoples, types of peoples, communities. So our Columbus, you know, statue built by the Italian Americans, funded in the wake of the lynching in New Orleans, is a lot different than the Columbus monolith that I just today was announced. It's going to be renamed in Baltimore. And how do you bring those two things together in a real dialogue? Because Columbus has been so many things to so many people over 400 or 500 years, and from the very beginning of this country. So for me, Carla mentioned my grand plan to bring YASA and the National Italian American Foundation together for our events, which was a wonderful partnership in so many ways, but also created a lot of controversy. And I got raked over the coals for my position as a then 29-year-old Italian American, that if a community did lose Columbus Day, like so many had, we should then turn more into the ethnocentric sort of position on Columbus, which is, okay, well, Columbus, the national figure, Columbus of the uniter of the two worlds, lost, but Columbus, the Italian-American icon, hasn't had his day in the court yet. So what I advocated was, if we lose the holiday somewhere, the community should then point out that while the local municipality was having what they saw as a national conversation about American history, we were being overlooked in our own unique history, and it should be Italian American Day and not switched over to Indigenous Peoples Day, because by now in our history for the past 30, 40 years, we are the community who celebrates that day. It's no longer the National Day for Immigration and the multicultural nature of the country. And when I said that, there was a lot of people who agreed with me, and there was a lot of people who called me a traitor and, you know, how could you abandon Columbus and this and that? But I think we have to be aware that there's many versions of him. He's meant many things to many different people. And ultimately, unfortunately, on paper, it's not our day. You know, it's become our day de facto, but de jure it's not. And nowhere in any of the documents that create Columbus Day at a federal level talk about us as part of the reasoning for the holiday. So as usual, we Italian Americans, probably because we're terrible at uniting and getting things done together, we're just left there with like the most confusing situation you could ever ask for. And how do we go from here? Where do we go?
The thing is, and nobody wants to keep it more than me and the statues and the day in the parade. Basically, I just want it to be like it was 3 years ago, okay, when we had all those things. However, as an Italian-American community, not just Chicago, but nationally, we have to be prepared if it does go away. If it does go away, and that's what we're talking about on the show, beyond Columbus, I mean, do we just say, okay, we're done, close up the store, there's no more Italian Americans, or there's no more Italian American community? I hope not. Obviously we don't, but where do we go from there? And if anything, I keep telling a few friends, like, we should use it as a rallying cry. Even if people, one thing, a big motivating push in human beings is anger, anger. We got the most people out for a rally in Chicago a day after they took the statue away, as people were ticked off and they came out there. And then as the days and the weeks and the months go by, you don't get as many. But if we do lose this, and let me say again, I don't want to lose anything, but if we do, and it's reality, we need to rally the troops. We need to, maybe it's a wake-up call to say, hey guys, we can't just go on, Chef Boyardee commercials and, you know, everything's great. There's a Columbus parade and it's all good. We've got to do a better job of educating our youth. I don't mean educating in school. I just mean educating our youth about our Italian American culture and traditions and everything we have. And the language is very important as well. And we have to do this, or we will be eventually in some way closing up shop in the store. Because we're not increasing anymore. We're decreasing.
Well, it's interesting, right? We talk about this on our show a lot, because many organizations and many platforms talk about protecting the Italian American heritage. Maybe it's my anthropological background. I don't actually see it that way. I see it as evolving it forward. I'm comfortable, because the great thing is, and we won't see the new census results until sometime next year, but in the 2010 and 2000 censuses, our numbers increased. Self-identification, without even having a spot on the census that says Italian American, through write-ins alone, in an amazing show of self-identification, 18 million and then 18.2 million people identified as an Italian American. What that tells me is not necessarily that we're disappearing, but that we're changing. And that makes each of us sort of responsible for our version of Italianità, because as much as we want to have a shared mythology and heritage and history, with the confluence of information technology, with the ability for people to look into their DNA more, look into their ancestry electronically, find resources they could never find, history is going to be less and less and less shared, I think, overall, and more and more and more sort of how you choose to pull the string. And that's why when I think about, you know, the idea of a historical piece of work that has an opinion, and it sort of sets its own ancestors in the minds of thinkers, and these people become historians or students based in a school of thought. And we Italian Americans are sort of dealing with that, I think. I think we're dealing with the dissolution of groupthink, but that's happening everywhere. It's like the bowling alone. People don't join bowling leagues anymore. I mean, I'm sure if you look at any Italian American organization, locally, nationally, whatever, numbers are creeping down. But that's the same with the Lions clubs and the Rotary clubs, and numbers are down everywhere. Numbers are up where you have Facebook followers. And, you know, you would think a paid membership was the sort of way to balance these things still, or measure these things still. And then you look at what we do on the internet, and when you put out a video and 200 something thousand people watch it and comment on it and this and that, and you think, okay, you could never get those 200,000 people to sign up for an Italian club, but this is how we participate now. So I agree with you. We as a community, particularly those of us who choose to be part of the institutional community that is still there, we need to address this thing from every scenario, because what we've done so far is basically beat each other up, and the holidays disappeared in many places. The statues have come down in many places, but in some places there have been victories and the statues have been put back up or things have been preserved. So as I said, probably 7-8 years ago now, I was trying to say, let's plan the worst case scenario and preserve an Italian American Day. And that could be a new holiday going forward. And people didn't want to hear it. I still think that's true. I think
what you're saying, if I understand you, is the traditional, what we know as an Italian American community is changing.
Yeah. But because
traditional Italian American community is going a different way.
It seems like it on a couple of levels. I mean, obviously as a group that is post assimilation, obviously that's naturally going to happen. That's been happening for generations of immigrants coming into this country and assimilating or integrating, whatever word people want to use. But I also think it's become more, it seems maybe sometimes more so nowadays, because everybody has their own version. I mean, it's the same reason that the two-party system is clearly dying on the vine, because why sign up for a party where you don't agree with everything when you can go online and find people who do agree with everything you think? So, you know, when I was growing up, a perfect example, right? I remember the first time I heard anybody mention the idea of the Kingdom of the Two Sicilies, right? I learned about Italy in school. I learned about the Renaissance. It happened in Italy. Nobody said to me it happened in a nation state here, a city state, and then this was another one. And I think it was Gay Talese on a video, and it blew my mind. He said, you know, most Italian immigrants actually don't even realize they come from a place called the Kingdom of the Two Sicilies. And I was this ardent Italian. I loved Italian history. I was so nationalist. And I started to read, and, you know, you had to go to a library and find this. And now, if I heard something like that and I went online, within 2 days, I'd be, you know, completely in a different world. So the way we attach to things and identify with them is so much faster evolving than I think our understanding of our self-identity even can catch up right now. So I think the Italian American community is clearly actually a healthy and strong one, but the ways in which we relate are more diverse and actually more available. So we did our poll of the community, and I was shocked at how many people still get together on a Sunday as a family, or make wine or jar tomatoes. And we do these videos and we get a lot of listeners who say basically, we are sort of a masterclass for them on other ways to celebrate their Italianness that may have disappeared from their family. So I can't say it's disappearing. I just think it's really evolving, like everything else, more about personal interaction with your own culture.
Very interesting take on it. I honestly, that's a very interesting take. I never thought of it in that way. It's more of a, so what you're saying is it's kind of a more of a digital community.
Yeah. In some ways it's digital. I mean, it's easier to participate digitally, but I think it's also more of an, it's more of an individual, it's a collection of individual experiences with our Italian heritage, as opposed to a monolithic Italian block experience, because there never was an Italian monolithic block.
And there never was a singular Italian American.
Right. And there never was a singular anything. It just, it took, you know, in the old days when it took years to become an expert in a topic, to get that message then out to other people, you had to boil it down to the sort of simplified monolithic version. We don't have to do that anymore.
Right. I pick up on a few things you just said there, John. One thing that I really related to was this idea that Italian American identity is always evolving. Absolutely. And any culture is always evolving. I mean, Italians in Italy are not the same as they were at the turn of the century. So this, in the sense that if you're authentically Italian American, you're supposed to be living and acting and following the same cultural norms that were in place in the early 20th century today is ridiculous, really. It's ridiculous. The other thing is what you're talking about with the history and the knowledge. That's what the Italian American Studies programs are all about, is being able to dive into that so that there were silences in our history. There were things that people have experienced that they didn't want to talk about. And there is a body of literature, good literature, written by authors that range all the way from the early 20th century up to the contemporary day, that explore different facets of the Italian American experience. There are wonderful historical essays and things like that. So it is out there for the taking, but we need to convince people that it is relevant and important. I think both Frank and I have a frustration sometimes with convincing our members of our own community to encourage their student, their children and their grandchildren to continue along with these types of studies. Even with, I mean, I think I'm a pretty typical case. I knew I my father instilled a sense of Italian American identity in me. He was a genealogist. Mm-hmm. I knew my family history way back to, you know, the early 1870s as when my family first came on, came over the Simonini side. And yet I decided I was going to study Italian, the Italian language. And I learned the Italian language very well. And I went to grad school and I studied contemporary Italy and Italian history. And only through that did I come around to who I was. I'm not Italian, I'm Italian American. And my piece of history, yes, it's very much connected to Italy. And I think it was essential that I go back and I study the history and I learn the language. But it brought me on a different route to understanding there were conditions. People didn't just pick up and leave because they were happy. Yeah. There were conditions, you know, that spurned that great migration. And then there were conditions over time that imbued the culture with its sense of self and its sense of meaning over time. And that had to do with things that were changing in the United States. So I'd like to see more engagement with that part of our history too, instead of just, you know, nostalgia is wonderful. Pride is wonderful, but when it's empty or it's just based on you, yourself, as the repository of all things, as opposed to reaching out, that's troubling. And I think what you said about social media, it does give us a way to connect again. Like you said, the workshops there, before you left Little Italy, you moved to a suburb, you became more and more isolated. Now, social media can bring us together that you might, I'm in Chicago, my family is in Rhode Island, I have colleagues in Ohio, and we can get together and share information about different things. So here we have an opportunity in today's world to explore all these little pieces of our history, big history and little history, you know, that otherwise might have gotten lost, you know, in the assimilation process.
I almost think that because we have such a unique and unprecedented opportunity to that kind of real exploration, I just feel like technology moves so fast, maybe humans haven't evolved to catch up to it yet. I think people really don't, like, it's amazing how much we can do and how we can talk about these things. And, you know, I can sit in this room that I'm in right now, put these headsets on and record my exploration of Columbus. It takes hours and hours and hours to edit it, but within a few hours of work, I can put it out there and tens of thousands of people can listen to it, comment, react, send me a recommendation. But you have to have the sort of courage and the wherewithal to do that, because it is an overwhelming cacophony of opinions and the vitriol behind both sides. I mean, I cringe when I hear Italian Americans say, you know, if you don't support Columbus, you're not authentically Italian American. I'm like, guys, there's no such thing as an authentic Italian. There's no such thing as any ethnicity. I mean, it's so absolutely personal. And that was a big thing of my time at NIAF, was to say to people all the time, your Italianness is yours. And I can't define it. And it could be completely different than mine, but it's still as valid and wonderful and informs my own in contrast and in similarities. And, you know, I think I wish people were focusing on kind of two things. First and foremost, remembering that while we don't interact the same way we used to, human to human, we're still a social animal, mm-hmm. and we do still need each other. And even if we didn't need each other, even if we could get a drone to deliver our happy meal and we could watch what we wanted on Netflix, we need each other for a higher calling, and people don't often believe in that higher calling anymore. And I think the second thing that's most important to me is the idea that we have to accept that all of this information that we're getting from Wikipedia and Instagram and this, that's just that. It's information. It's not knowledge. It's not, it's raw material, and history is messy and it's complicated, and you can believe contrasting things. Like, I have people, you know, when it comes to my Italian American heritage, I love going to Little Italy and seeing the tricolor flag and that red, white, and green. And it means, you know, I love waving it in the parade on Columbus Day. But at the same time, when I go to Naples, I deal with the historical ramifications of unification, the Risorgimento. And I like to see the Bourbon flag. I like to see the local history. I don't feel as attached to the Italianness in Italy, which is weird and contrasting. And I have to, I accept.
Italians here in the United States, you know, we were all.
Yeah, I mean, I have to accept that I have contrasts and conflicts in my own views on these things. And that's okay, as long as I do the work to prove them out, even just for myself.
No, I agree with that too. I'm getting back. Yeah, absolutely. I have similar feelings when I go back and forth between Italy and here. But getting back to studying the history and understanding it, I think in my perspective, this is just my observations, like the attachment to Columbus is based on that sense of nostalgia and tradition without necessarily there being an understanding. There were very real and valid reasons why the Italian American community at different points in history attached themselves to that holiday and used it as a means of self-realization and self-actualization. But is that, do we still need that today? I guess, yeah. You know, if we can understand why it was in the past, and then we look at our reality in the present, you know, why
one
Columbus?
One thing I'd like to say, as far as like specifically the statute, I'm a different kind of guy where I feel like a certain responsibility when I think about Victor Arrigo in Chicago and organizing and raising all this money to put it there and to get the Columbus statue in the park, or Carlo Barsotti, mm-hmm. who did all this work amongst others. And I feel like as an Italian American in 2020, sure, I could say, I didn't know Carlo Barsotti. What do I care about Carlo Barsotti? And it was 120 years ago, but I do.
Yeah.
I do. I feel like I'm here today and it's my responsibility to protect his interest from 120 years ago. Now, I may be a little nuts, and I really kind of am, but regardless, this is the way I feel. And you know, I think there's, you know, and I understand at the end of the day, whether or not they happen, it's out of my control. It's out of our, kind of all of our control. And we would have to move on, but defending and fighting the fight, I must do that. That's the way I look at it.
You know, it's funny, I try not to let my personal stuff, particularly with the Education Foundation and the responsibility to objectivity and dialogue there, and then with the show and an audience that's so diverse, I try not to really let my personal feelings eke into these things. But I will say one thing that I am personally attached to is the idea of the statues, because for, you know, when we talk about Robert E. Lee and the Confederacy, and okay, there's a sort of a clear-cut dynamic there that I guess I understand, and I'm not trying to be relativistic, but there, like, even for example, the Columbus statue in Baltimore, which was just addressed today, is coming down or being renamed the oldest monument in the country to Columbus. From my American perspective, when I put on the sort of patriot hat, I hate the tearing down of history. I hate the fact that we should be operating with the scalpel and we're operating with hatchets, and only, you know, one half is screaming and the other half is plugging their ears, so it's doing nothing. But when it comes to monuments that were built by the Italian American community, I look at the monument that I'll be visiting tomorrow at Columbus Circle here in Manhattan. You know, that's nickels and dimes donated by Italian Americans.
By poor and, people who didn't have a, yeah.
Yeah, and so that should be preserved not because we ossify or preserve their view of Columbus, but because we preserve the story of what they experienced in getting that built and what it meant to them. When we tear those things down, if they don't necessarily jive with the popular conception of the day, yeah, we do. I mean, people will say, you know, you can tear down a monument and it doesn't erase history. Let me tell you something. Anybody who tells you that, in my opinion, is either far too deep in academia or a blowhard by nature, because walk around your city and I guarantee you 90% of the monuments and plaques you see, you couldn't tell who that person was if your life depended on it. So those things are important, because even with a statue, this history gets washed away over time. So if you tear it down, it's far more likely that we forget the story. I truly believe material culture, unless it's strikingly offensive, it should be preserved and interpreted and used as a teachable tool.
No, I absolutely agree with that. I absolutely agree with that. And, you know, so then the question becomes, can we do that and also recognize the opposite side, you know, what it represents for others? Can we maintain these material culture, these monuments, what they represented in their time, and celebrate them for that, and then also recognize the bigger picture that they elicit as well? Like, that to me is really where I would like to see us end up somehow. I know one of my colleagues is a historian, and she sent me a little plaque about an unsuccessful bid to take down a monument in the South. I don't remember exactly what it was, but what the Historic Society ended up doing is they put up another monument next to it with a plaque explaining the one next to it. This was built in this epoch, money was raised by these people, and this was their intent at that period in time. Here is another way that we can interpret it today. So it wasn't tearing anything down, it was honoring the position in time that the original monument represented, and then saying, hey, you know, we learn, we evolve, we change over time. Here's another piece of information to help you understand and interpret why that monument is on the spot today. So I guess,
that's wonderful. I mean, you know, we should be leading the charge for those things.
Yes. Right?
As we talk about, if we want to preserve our own history, we should be working to broaden that and broaden that sort of franchise as much as possible. And unfortunately, we don't, which is human nature, because, you know, you're in a battle, so you're swinging and you're going to have some collateral damage. It's sort of survival mode, I think, for a lot of people. And I think, you know, I've been desperate to have dialogue with Native Americans, because let's not forget, this is the aggrieved people we're talking about here. I think we've conflated it with anybody who has a problem with America blames Columbus. And that's another thing that really pains me and sort of makes me want to tell this story in an objective way, which is, you know, let's really dig down to what this guy did. What was the crime? What were his weaknesses? What were his strengths? And it's not fair to blame Christopher Columbus for all of the ills that have affected our society. And frankly, that is not drawn, that's not, that feeling in me is not powered by my Italianness. It's my Italianness that brought me to Columbus by default. And it's my just humanity that says, this guy's not getting a fair deal. And let's do the work, as I keep saying. So I think we as a community have to lead by example, and we have to do something we rarely do well, frankly, which is unite and have that sort of staying power. Because, you know, Carly, you talk about figura and the idea of sort of, you know, I think to me, the motto of the Italian American community, if you had to pick one, would be put your head down and work. We're not feather rustlers. And we always tease on the show, the old Neapolitan saying, Francia Spagna, basta che se magna, France or Spain. France can rule, Spain can rule, as long as we eat, doesn't matter. And I think that's born into us for blood memory. Like, you know, you worry about the big stuff. I got a family here and we're going to jar tomatoes and we're good. Like, you know, so I don't think we're terribly good at moving the organs of state or social consciousness, you know?
Let's hope that, you know, we have more students studying this, that, you know, try my best to carry it on with my kids, the students in my class, many of whom are not Italian Americans, by the way, who get a lot out of learning about the immigrant experience from that particular viewpoint. So I think there is room for us to come together. We've run long here. Frank, do you want to finish?
I would just say, John, thank you so much for the interview. Very interesting talking to you. And I think all three of us just have a job ahead of us. Mm-hmm. And we need to keep going forward with this entire movement and mission.
You know, like I said, I again have good memories of some of the Columbus Day celebrations I was involved with as a kid and growing up. And I would like to see there be opportunities for that sort of engagement on a meaningful level too. Not just the kiss me, I'm Italian stuff, but like, hey, let's look into who we are, what our history has been, what our struggles have been, what our successes have been, and carry that on for the future generations, whether Columbus is part of that picture or not. That is, I think, what is an important charge for us to make our sense of culture evolve and go forward. So
I think Columbus presents us with an opportunity to really serve our nation in saying that, you know, his joining of the two worlds comes with collateral damage and comes with collateral beauty. Mm-hmm. And we as a community have this wonderful encapsulated digestible, accessible story of what it means to be an immigrant group that suffered and an immigrant group that succeeded. And why shouldn't we, if we are truly past the need to get together one day a year and wave flags to say, hey, look at us, we're good too. That's not going to last forever anyway. And so why not help lead this evolution of a holiday and a figure to say there's pain and beauty in the American immigrant experience, but that's what this nation's about. It's about the rawness of human potential. And look what we've done. And we pray that that's available to peoples all over the planet into the future. And if our story can be an example, all the better that we preserve it and keep our story and our awareness of it alive.
Well said. Well said. So, John, thank you so much for taking so much time to talk with us today. We really appreciate it. So,
my pleasure.
John, take care. Thank you.
Thank you both.
Looking forward to the other episodes of your podcast coming out too on the Columbus.
As soon as I start to look forward to the editing, then we'll get them out.
Well, I'm hoping I have some minimal help with our editing here too, so hopefully it'll go well. So, thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
And bye, John. Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Bye, John.